Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. I'm Dr. Marty Gentius from Kent State University, and this week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. Kim Desmond speaks with Dr. James Lentz and Assistant Dean Lloyd Unyet of Indiana University of Pennsylvania about Second Life and the virtual world applications for counseling and education.
Okay, I want to thank you both for your time today. I appreciate your willingness to talk about Second Life and its applications in education and some applications in counseling. I thought we could first start by describing Second Life, what it is, and maybe the basic concepts behind it.
Sure. Second Life is essentially a video game without a point.
Okay.
Imagine for a moment that you're looking at a video game and that you have a character, an avatar, but there are no rules. There's no objective. Mm-hmm. There's no winning. There's no losing. And suddenly you can create anything you want. You can make buildings, you can make ships, you can fly, you can do anything that you want. Initially, most people's reaction to Second Life is to go play for a little bit. Mm-hmm. But then they start thinking about the things that they can do in Second Life that would not be possible in real life towards their work goals. Mm-hmm. And suddenly there are opportunities to do things there. For instance, in education, we have an assignment where we train pre-service teachers to design a classroom, mm-hmm. and they draw it on a piece of paper because we couldn't possibly give them a building
right. Full
of classrooms to work with.
Yeah.
In Second Life, we can give them a building with classrooms and say, here's a 20 by 10 meter classroom, design it, and we'll grade you on how well you design this for an actual classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So it quickly goes from being a video game with no point to a work tool that has whatever goal or point you want it to have.
That's why a lot of times with Second Life, those of us that have been in world, which mm-hmm. is a term that's used frequently, we kind of bristle up when somebody starts calling it a game, because it really isn't a game. It's a virtual world that we can move around in, interact with other people. We can, as Dr. Len said, we can build things. We can create many different environments.
Mm-hmm. And it also differentiates itself from a game in another way. Second Life is really more closely related to things like MySpace than it is to a video game like Tomb Raider.
Okay.
In that it's really a social networking piece of software, where most video games have a target audience of, for instance, teenage boys
uh-huh.
to young men.
Uh-huh.
The average person in Second Life is actually a 35-year-old female.
Okay.
It's a social networking piece of software where people actually use it to create relationships.
Okay. So
there's also over 10 million people who have joined Second Life. Now, many of them are not active in it at any given time. There are not that many involved, but it is a large community of people.
So it really is a virtual world that people are creating online by purchasing land or purchasing islands? Or?
Yeah, virtual. You need to understand the differentiation between a virtual world and Second Life.
Right.
It's kind of the difference between a virtual world would be equal to a car and Second Life is equal to a Chrysler.
Okay,
it's more specific.
Great.
All right. And there are different virtual worlds. They all have sort of commonalities among them. And the commonalities are things like Sims. An SIMS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in Second Life, a sim is an island.
Okay.
Different virtual worlds can have different ways of describing their sims, but it's short for a simulation area.
Ah, okay.
And so this simulation area in Second Life is an island. Islands are somewhat expensive. It costs roughly about $1,800 a year to keep an island.
Okay.
An island is approximately, 200 meters?
It's actually 65,536 square meters, or about 16 acres of virtual space.
Of virtual land.
And for educators, it costs $875 to buy an island, and then there's a monthly fee of $1,500. So your first
fee
year
or an annual
fee? Well, you pay it annually, but they charge it as if it were a monthly fee. So it's $150 a month, but you pay for it once a year.
So
it's $1,800 a year to maintain it, but there's that original $875. But also, to be a member of Second Life, there is no charge. It's free to join Second Life, to create your avatar, to move around in this space. If you want to build things, then normally you would own land, but you can also rent land. There are places out there that will rent to you. Some places will provide free space for a short period of time, maybe so you can get started. I know that there's a process where you can request space on an island for a semester, for your first semester if you're in education, and at no charge. So there are a variety of different ways that you can do that. On our islands that IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, owns, we actually have our students building things on the island as part of their coursework.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sims, or islands, in Second Life can be broken down farther into what are called parcels.
Okay.
And a parcel would be, for instance, a small space of land, a small corner of the island, where you could build a building or you could build some kind of a device. Some people build ships.
Okay.
You can build almost anything, a statue, whatever you want to put on your parcel. So, for instance...
Kind of like subdividing, then.
It is like subdividing. And on Crimson Island, which is our main island at IUP, mm-hmm. we have a parcel set aside for something called the Peabody Hall, which is a classroom building.
Okay.
And so that's one parcel. And the nice thing about parcels in Second Life is you can set them up to have different permissions than the rest of the island. So, for instance, I could limit access to the parcel to my students only.
Okay.
So that if people came and, say, were visiting the island just to see what was there, and I didn't want them walking in on my classroom, mm-hmm. I could restrict it so that only my students could go in the building. Those other people could not come in.
Okay.
And so you have parcels. And then every object in a virtual world and on Second Life is called a prim.
Okay.
And prims are spheres, cubes, pyramids, basic shapes that can be stretched and compressed and made larger or smaller in order to build larger objects. And when you look around you, almost everything that you see is made up of basic shapes.
Mm-hmm.
And so within Second Life, you use prims to create whatever it is you want to make, a statue or a building or whatever. Now, in order to keep down the bandwidth, because, of course, the more stuff you have in Second Life, the more memory and the more bandwidth on the Internet it's going to take to bring that into your computer,
uh-huh.
Second Life has a limit of 15,000 prims per island or per sim.
That sounds like a lot, but... if you're doing a lot of work on an island, you can run out of prims pretty quickly. But, of course, you can remove things, store them in another location, and then bring them back on the island as you need. So that's a way of utilizing your prims maximum.
Exactly. But that's how the basic environment functions,
mm-hmm.
with avatars, prims, parcels, and islands or sims.
Mm-hmm.
And your avatar, you can design when you first join Second Life, you create a name. You have to create a name based on, you select a last name for your avatar. Mine happens to be Merlin.
Mm-hmm.
And I selected that from a list of several hundred that I had a choice from. But then they change those. I think it's every, when a name gets picked by 60 people, then they remove it and they put a different name out there. So it's constantly changing. Then you create your own first name, whatever you'd like to be. So I'm Computer Merlin. That's computer with a K. And once you create your avatar name, then you actually create your avatar. You go in and decide what kind of shape you want, whether you want to be male or female, first of all, or a furry, an animal. And then from there you
can... Or a robot,
right? Many different things. Then from there you decide on body shape and, you know, height and on and on and on. You can then adjust your facial features. You can decide what color hair. You can decide many different things in the way of your body type and so forth. it's interesting how people choose their body type and mm-hmm. so on. There's been a number of studies done on that. In some cases, people want to look just like themselves, mm-hmm. or maybe themselves a few years younger. In other cases, they want to look totally different. Uh-huh. And the same thing with the type of clothing you're wearing. When you first join, you're given kind of a standard set of clothing, mm-hmm. and then you can customize that. You can change the color of the material. You can change the texture. You can change the patterns. You might want a leopard skin blouse on, for example, mm-hmm. and some other kind of pants or something, mm-hmm. or skirt or whatever. It varies from person to person. Then later, and usually you can spot people who are new in Second Life because they look like everybody else. There's okay. kind of just so many choices that they can make.
Okay.
So very quickly, most people end up going out and either customizing their clothing or purchasing clothing. And there's actually a full economy out in Second Life. The coin of the realm, basically, the type of monetary system is called Linden dollars, L-I-N-D-E-N dollars. Linden Labs is the company that developed Second Life.
Okay.
And it takes approximately 265 Linden dollars to equal one U.S. dollar.
That's about right.
It changes throughout. It's like any other currency.
Okay.
And so I might see a shirt or a coat in Second Life that's for sale.
Mm-hmm.
I decide I want to buy that. Maybe it's going to cost me 50 Linden dollars. Gee, that sounds like a lot of money. But then when you start figuring, no, 50, oh, that's about 20 cents
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
of real U.S. dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And so very soon people start buying things in Second Life. So there can become a cost. You can also earn money out there a variety of different ways. And maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. But you can also put money into an account.
Okay.
So you can use your credit card
mm-hmm.
essentially
mm-hmm.
to buy Lindens. And amazingly enough, you can actually convert the money back into American cash.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who are actually making a very good living in Second Life, developing land, selling parcels, selling clothing, selling all kinds of things, including services.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody stopped me yesterday and was telling me that they had run into a woman in Second Life who was making her living singing in
mm-hmm.
Second Life. She sings through her audio equipment. Her avatar performs. And she charges for performances, and various venues are paying her to come in and sing. And she said she's bringing in a livelihood. She's actually able to make a living doing this.
This is fascinating.
And tied in with the singing, a way of earning money a lot of times is going to various venues that are set up in Second Life where a band is playing
mm-hmm.
or someone is singing. And in many cases, this might be a new band that's trying to get heard,
mm-hmm.
and they might pay you 10 or 15 Linden dollars, again, that's just a few cents, to stand on their dance floor and dance.
Mm-hmm.
They have movements and so on. Why do they want to do that? Why are they going to pay you? Well, it's because they want you to listen to their music.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you like their music, they'll sell you a CD or they'll sell you certain songs.
With
a number of bands,
money.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right. And a number of bands are actually getting heard that way, getting their music out through Second Life and other virtual worlds.
Interesting. What about what resources are needed to access Second Life?
Okay, it doesn't require the high-end, super high-end computer, but
uh-huh.
it does need to be a computer that's fairly new. I was running it on a 3-year-old computer, and it worked okay.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest problem that we have, that we run into constantly, is video drivers. The software in your computer that actually controls your video card, because it's very intensive on video, so much of it is looking at all these objects out there, video drivers become crucial. And so in most cases, I find if people are having trouble at not running properly on their machine or not running at all or crashing frequently, they just need to update their video driver. And usually it's fairly easy. They go into their settings for their hardware and they tell it to update the video driver. It goes out to the website for their particular hardware and gets it for them. That's one of the biggest issues with resources. Again, it's free to join Second Life, but yet if you want to buy island space and so on, it can cost you money. As far as other equipment or anything. Mm-hmm. If you're going to be using voice in Second Life, it's very helpful to have a headset to use rather than a separate microphone.
Okay.
It works better. You just get a better quality of voice. Mm-hmm. In fact, the headsets that we're wearing right now and making this podcast would be very appropriate for Second Life.
Okay.
Other than that, you don't really need anything else other than a good high-speed computer and a high-speed internet connection. It won't work on a dial-up connection. Mm-hmm. I understand that it won't work with the satellite connections for the internet either, because satellite communication for internet, not like cable or DSL, mm-hmm. satellite communication comes down high speed from the satellite, but your uplink is at a much lower speed. Well, Second Life is a two-way communication, okay. So you need that speed both directions. Other
cable
than that,
seems to be the best connection.
Yeah,
really
cable
does.
Works very well. There are some other issues if you're working in an educational environment. Yeah. For example, students might go into a lab and may not have administrative rights high enough to install the software, because there is some software that Second Life installs. It installs what's called a client. It's not a really large program or anything. It doesn't slow your computer down a bunch or anything like that because of it, but it does need to be installed. So if the computers are kind of locked down for certain kinds of access in a lab, then you may have to have your tech support people go in and install the software and get the settings just right in there.
Okay.
So those are resource issues that you need to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Have you had trouble with students being able to access Second Life or not having proper...
From home, yes. Mm-hmm. From home, they'll often say, you know... my computer can't, to be perfectly honest, I mean, I'm an educational technology professor.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fairly robust computer at home, and I can't access Second Life from home.
Okay.
My computer's 4 years old,
mm-hmm.
and it just doesn't have the equipment to make this work.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very sympathetic when my students say, you know, I can't do this from home. And I say, well, if we're going to do this, then you're going to have to find a computer that has access and can do this.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that's one of those issues that's going to fade off in the next year or two. As people, you know, everybody, the general replacement of a computer is every 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And as computers are being replaced in the next 1 to 2 years, I think most computers are going to be able to operate Second Life without any trouble.
Okay.
We're really at the genesis stage
mm-hmm.
of using this software.
You mentioned yours is 4 years old. My new computer, right out of the box, brand new, I couldn't get Second Life to run on it properly either. Even though it was a brand new computer, it didn't have the latest video driver for the video card I had in it. And so I had to download that. So
okay.
it's not uncommon even for very new machines to need that.
Mm-hmm.
What about computer labs on campus? Do you find that those generally are equipped here at least?
Most don't have the software, though.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The hardware will handle it if the software gets installed on
That's
it.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
and some people, even here in our university where we're using Second Life a lot, some of the tech support people are reluctant to put Second Life out on the machines
mm-hmm.
Because it takes time, but also they're concerned about the amount of space on the hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
They're concerned about security issues and on and on and on. And rightfully so. I think it is something that should be questioned. Is this something, just like any other software, that we should have on the machines? Now, here at IUP, we have it in some of our labs, but not all of our labs.
Okay.
So we direct students into those labs where we do have them.
I see. Can we talk a little bit about how Second Life is being used in academia and how it's used in courses?
Mm-hmm. Lots of universities and K-12 as well, all high schools and up, are using Second Life. There are approximately 200 colleges and universities that are using it, including schools like Harvard, Drexel, Penn State, Stanford, San Jose State, Iowa State, Temple, and IUP.
Mm-hmm.
There are thousands of businesses that are using it, organizations like IBM, Nissan Motors, Sears, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, a really neat site,
mm-hmm.
called NOAA, or National Oceanic and Atmospheric. NASA has a great site. American Library Association, American Red Cross. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama have sites out there. Many different uses of it in education for teaching online courses and also in enhancing existing courses with online material in it. And I'm sure Dr. Lenz will talk about that in just a few minutes. It's an opportunity to teach outside the box. Collaboration and communication are such an important part in classes anyway, and Second Life is really designed well for that. We're currently using it to teach classes in communications media, in gaming and simulation. Actually, those students are learning to do a lot of the design and development work for our faculty across the university. Introduction to technology, exhibition of photography and graphics materials that students have created, anthropology, archaeology, for example, in those fields, recreation of artifacts and ruins, using it in English for communication collaboration skills. Some areas that we're looking at and aren't in yet at our university include things like art and music and the performing arts. I mentioned earlier the idea of a stage where a band would be playing. Why not have it our university band or some of our students performing their individual instruments? Maybe our artwork our students are creating, putting that out on an exhibit site. When I showed our dean of Humanities and Fine Arts Second Life for the first time, he was very skeptical at first, and then I started showing him venues such as museums, art museums, stages where they were putting on plays, music venues, and so forth. All of a sudden, he started getting very excited. He started seeing the connection. A lot of times, people just have to be shown something similar to the field that they're in. In special education, we'd like to be looking at simulations, for example, of impairment. Put our students in wheelchairs and have them interact with Second Life environment for a week and not allow them out of that wheelchair. They have to interact in that environment and deal with issues such as going into buildings that have steps instead of ramps, that doors that are difficult to open, rooms that are too small to navigate around the furniture and so on. We can deal very easily with vision impairment in Second Life because we can change the way the sun is shining in the room or in the environment we're on at the island. We can say, oh, let's select noon or let's select midnight or anything in between. With hearing impairment students, we have three different modes of communication within Second Life. We have chat, which allows anybody within a certain small radius of us to see whatever we're typing. We also have instant message where I can communicate just me with another person and so nobody else around us sees that. And we also have voice communication. Well, if we don't let them use the voice, then we're dealing with hearing impaired issues. Audiology and speech pathology could also be developed there. But also you can simulate things. For example, in audiology and speech pathology, we might show an ear and have the student walk through that very enlarged ear that we've created in Second Life and explore the different parts of the ear. Or I remember a movie many, many years ago. It was called Incredible
The
Journey.
Fantastic Voyage,
where they miniaturized these people. They put them into a submarine and they injected them into someone's blood vessels. You could do things like that in Second Life as far as creating something in biology, for example, and have them explore in Second Life walking through that. Use of it in history and museums, recreation of historical events. We've talked about here at IUP of developing or recreating Pickett's Charge at Gettysburg and have 10,000 pre-programmed avatars, soldiers, moving across that field and have our students join in the battle and interact with those people, with the environment. Duck behind that rock when the bullets are going over their head or hearing the cannon shots going over their head, seeing people getting shot next to them as they're in the battle. Literature, museums, speaking and writing opportunities with others around the world, because it's not just English-speaking people out there, but people from all different kinds of environments. Business simulations, monetary studies, simulation of classroom environments and situations, like Dr. Lenz mentioned earlier. So those are just a few of the educational things. We're also looking at our admissions office, using it for recruiting, orientation of new students, communicating with prospective students. We're in the process of creating the largest in the United States anyway, the largest number of new learning and living communities are new dorms. We're building almost $500 million worth of them on this campus. Mm-hmm. Well, the students have a choice of 9 different layouts of floor plans of their rooms. And so why not create a copy of each of those and let the students walk through those mm-hmm. in Second Life and decide which floor plan meets their needs mm-hmm. and then be able to collaborate with their future roommates. Mm-hmm. So there are many different ways that you could use it in educational uses. Why don't you jump in at this point and tell about what you're doing in it? Because you've done so much with Second Life in your classes.
Well, Second Life's strengths in terms of using it as an educational technology are that it allows you to communicate at a distance mm-hmm. in an interactive and visual way. So where, as Lloyd said, it has a chat feature. Mm-hmm. It has a chat feature where you can actually see who you're talking to. In a sense, mm-hmm. you see somebody else's avatar. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I have a research course that I'm going to be teaching this summer, and we're going to be doing lectures and discussions in Second Life, which will allow my students to take the class from Philadelphia, from New York, from Chicago. Doesn't matter where they are, mm-hmm. they can come to class. And so we're going to use it for that strength. Mm-hmm. Another strength is it allows you to interact with visual three-dimensional concepts that would either be unavailable or impossible to replicate or even unsafe to replicate. And Lloyd alluded to the archaeology program where Dr. Scott Moore has created on Archaeology Island for IUP, he's created a ship that is floating on the water and it has a crane mm-hmm. and it's an archaeology ship and it's designed to look at shipwrecks.
Okay.
And then below the ship, there's a shipwreck and the students can go into the water and go down and conduct underwater archaeology. Well, now you can imagine the mm-hmm. dangers and the expenses related to doing that in real life. Mm-hmm. And yet here in Second Life, he can have every one of his archaeology students both afford to be able to do that and have the necessary skills to be able to do that and get the experience. So it's wonderful at demonstrating three-dimensional concepts that would otherwise be unavailable. Another related to that.
By the way, in that particular archaeology project, he actually has been on many dives down to that particular ship. Mm-hmm. He took photographs of it and then brought those back so that we could recreate the ship, exact duplicate of that wreck that he has been diving. I believe it's off of Cyprus, isn't it?
It is off Cyprus, okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. In English, we had a professor tell us that she has been teaching Beowulf for many, many years, but that her students never really got Beowulf
okay.
until she created the virtual environment that Beowulf exists in. And suddenly they could see the chambers, they could see Grendel, they uh-huh. could see Beowulf and see the areas where the battles take place.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, oh, now this all suddenly makes sense to me. I can see it.
Uh-huh.
And so in that regard, you know, again, imagine trying to do that in real life and the cost, the expense, the space,
uh-huh.
where in Second Life it's really minimal. So there are those aspects to it. And, you know, how am I using it? I mentioned earlier, I have my education students are going to be designing classrooms.
Uh-huh.
In a 3D world, they'll then make movies of their classroom, which they can then include in their digital portfolios and show that they know how to design a classroom, and here's what the classroom would look like. We have students giving PowerPoint presentations in Second Life, designing it for distance learning environments. So there's all kinds of things like this. Now, it's not good for everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I always tell my educational technology students, you know, we often find something that works really well at one thing and then try to make it do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And Second Life isn't good for that.
It's just one tool.
If I was giving a handout, I could put a handout in Second Life, but it would be very hard to read and hard to what we call res, which mm-hmm. is the document appearing. It takes a while for resolution to occur. I would put it on a web page or send it to them as a handout or put it on a PDF document or a Word document. It doesn't have to be in Second Life. And so, you know, I try to tell them, use it what it's good for, not what it is not good for. And one other thing that I think is a powerful tool is we all know, those of us who teach, we have students who don't want to answer questions in front of groups,
mm-hmm.
don't feel comfortable getting up in front of the groups. We have found and the research is supporting this, that there's a certain level of anonymity in Second Life mm-hmm. where maybe I'm not comfortable with how I look, but I can create an avatar that I'm very comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And suddenly these students are willing to talk mm-hmm. and they're willing to do things. And my students were joking last week, they had a student in their group who in class never speaks, uh-huh. never says a word, but in Second Life they couldn't get her to shut up. Okay. And she just came out of her shell, and she uh-huh. was like, well, I feel comfortable there. I feel empowered there. And she said, I feel young, thin, and beautiful there. Mm-hmm. And so there's a certain level of anonymity. And, you know, again, Lloyd alluded to this earlier, that some people's avatars don't look like them, don't maybe not even the same gender. They are completely anonymous within this avatar. Other people, like myself, have an avatar that very closely resembles mm-hmm. who they are. My avatar's name is 8 Shepherd. I'm a father of 8 kids. Mm-hmm. I'm their shepherd. I'm 8 Shepherd. Okay. So that's a reflection of my real life. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what's called my profile, any avatar you look at has a profile. Mm-hmm. Many people leave their profiles completely blank. There's nothing in there. Where my profile has a lot of information about my work and my family mm-hmm. and my real life. And so it allows you to make a decision about how much anonymity you want. Mm-hmm. And it allows you to, if there are parts of you that have made you hesitant to come out in public, mm-hmm. suddenly you can shed those mm-hmm. and take on a different persona and really get involved. And so we've seen that it has great advantages in providing students with a safe, anonymous way of interacting with their peers. And I think a lot of research needs to be done in this area, but I would like to see if that then transfers into their real lives.
Sure.
In along that same line, there have been some reported studies of how people in Second Life, if they're taking a course, an online course, we've seen over the years very, very high dropout rates or non-completion of classes and that are online. Just a lot of students don't have the, I guess, the follow-through to mm-hmm. to stay on top of the material and move through it like they need to. With Second Life, they're finding with online courses offered through Second Life that the students are more engaged, that they seem to have a much higher completion rate. I think some of the very factors that you were just mentioning are reasons for that happening. They get involved more, and they're communicating with others and asking for help and offering help mm-hmm. and discussing. And gee, I know when I've gone in and talked with people, almost everybody is very willing to take the time in Second Life to answer your questions. If I go to an island, and especially educational islands mm-hmm. where somebody is there and I'll start a conversation with them. If I just walked up to somebody on the street, they'd kind of back away in many mm-hmm. cases. But instead, oh, okay, hi, how are you doing? Yes, of course, that's how we're using our island. And they're very willing to share, mm-hmm. much more so than in real life.
Mm-hmm. I know, Lloyd, you showed me a site where it actually simulated a tsunami, I think.
Yes, that was NOAA, National mm-hmm. Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
It's Lloyd's favorite island.
Yeah.
When I'm giving tours demonstrating Second Life to people for the first time, that's one I always go to. Uh-huh. They have a simulation of a hurricane, and you can get in a simulated airplane and fly through the hurricane and into the eye and all. The tsunami is interesting because you click on a button at the tsunami area of their island, and it activates the tsunami process, the simulation. And so the first thing that happens is the ocean starts going out, and so you see all this wonderful beach area. And so, of course, people would want to walk out on the beach and start exploring. Now, until I went through that simulation the first time, I didn't realize that a tidal wave or a tsunami did that first. The water recedes for quite a little while. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, here comes this big wave. Well, while that's receding, the water is receding, they have information panels out in the water, but now all of a sudden they're visible, and so you can walk out and read them. And then this big wave comes in. So what I always do then is I fly up in the air, because again, in Second Life, you can fly, you can run, you can do all kinds of things, teleport to other locations. So I fly up in the air above the height of the wave, spin around so I'm facing the shoreline, and then watch the wave crash into the shore and destroy the buildings that are there. And of course, anybody that's still standing on the beach is covered over with water too. Mm-hmm. You can't die in Second Life, so no problem there. But then it, as the water starts receding a bit again, then you see the ruins of the buildings. And so people then learn from that simulation, oh, that water's going to recede first, then the big waves. So I shouldn't go out there. I should seek high ground instead. And by the way, there is a big high mountain right there so that you can, you could actually walk up onto the mountain and be above the water line too. Mm-hmm. Those are the kinds of simulations that are interesting. I was giving a workshop in Second Life to a group of future teachers recently, and I took them to NASA's site, and they have just a fantastic site. We took a virtual tour of the space shuttle, walked through it, went through the cargo bay, went up into the cabin area, looked at the control panel in the cockpit. Then we took a simulated launch in a space or in a rocket up into space. And then we docked with the International Space Station, and we took a tour of that in this virtual world. Then, and this was at night, it happened to be an evening class, and so then I told all the students, okay, everybody up, let's go outside. Well, what are we going outside for? Well, I want to show you some stars, and we'll talk about space a little bit. Got out there, and I pointed out a few things, a few objects in the sky, asked everybody if they knew where the North Star was. Or, excuse me, at first I said, does anybody know where Polaris is? And most of them had a very blank look, and I said, then I said, North Star. And so some of them could point to the North Star, and within a couple of minutes I had shown everybody how to find the Big Dipper and then use the pointer stars of the Big Dipper to find the North Star. And then I had everybody look up in a particular spot in the sky. I said, watch right up there. And they said, what are we looking for? I said, just watch. And about 10 seconds later, one of the students said, look, there's a star that's moving. And I said, well, from Earth you wouldn't perceive the star moving like that, so that's not a star. What is it? And a few seconds later, one of the students said, well, it must be a satellite. And I asked the class, now these were students that were about 20 years old, not one of them had ever seen a satellite before. When I was growing up, we went outside and watched Sputnik and other satellites going over because it was so unique back in the 50s and 60s. So then I said, well, does anybody know what satellite that is? And one of them said, well, maybe it's one of those that beams down television shows. I said, no, that one happens to be a station, in a stationary orbit. So I then pointed out that it was the International Space Station. So then I explained to him that's the International Space Station going over. And one of them said, you mean the one we were just taking a tour of? And I said, precisely. And then a few seconds later, somebody said, look, there's another star moving. And I said, no, not star. And they said, yo, you're right. It's a satellite. And I said, but which one? And then one of them said, is that the shuttle? And I said, yes, because remember earlier in class, I mentioned that the shuttle had just undocked from the space station earlier today, and it's going to be landing tomorrow. Well, from that experience of seeing the virtual shuttle and the virtual space station, and now seeing it live up there in the sky, it really sunk into the students what it was all about. It made it much more effective than if I would have just talked about the shuttle or taken them out and just pointed it out to them. But here we were tying in real life and Second Life together, and it made for a much more meaningful experience. We then went back inside and we explored some more, including some planetariums in Second Life, saw some of the same constellations that I'd pointed out to the students outside. So it really reinforced. What a teaching opportunity that was. Oh, they wanted to know, is it up there every night like that? And I said, no, I actually went to NASA's site ahead of time, found that it was going to be up there tonight, visible from our location, and what time it was going to be and exactly where to look in the sky. So I went to that website and showed them. And so now, after that, I heard from a number of them, I go out there every chance I get and watch the space station as it goes over. What a great opportunity.
Yeah. As you know, many of our listeners are counselors, counselor educators, and I know neither one of you are in the field, but I wondered if you had some ideas just brainstorming about possible applications of Second Life to counseling.
Well, actually, I went out and did some research on this ahead of time for the question, and there are a number of sites out in Second Life already set up for counseling. In fact, one of them is called the Counseling Center. And it was interesting. They call it Wellness Island also, and it's open to the public. It's been open since February of 2007.
And we should say we're not endorsing
no.
this. We're just saying this exists out this, there. And we,
exactly. They said, empathetic, caring, professional counseling can help you feel your best, uncover your true selves, and offer support as you find our way. We offer counseling services by appointment to individuals and couples, as well as group therapy sessions on a variety of topics, and goes on and on and on. It says, we listen, we do not judge. We're not here to give you the answers, but help you find your own. We respect and celebrate your individuality. How does it work? We have private, secure offices for individual, couple, and even group sessions. You'll be out of chat range on the privately owned Wellness Island. Mm-hmm. And they even tell you how to make an appointment and so on. That's wow. one, just one example. There was another one called Lighthouse Counseling, Second Life Counseling Association for Counseling and Coaching. Mm-hmm. Another one, Second Life Counseling Association, based on the tenets of the American Counseling Association and the National Association of Marriage and Family Therapists. Mm-hmm. Life Learning Center, counseling, victim support, anger management, etc. Virtual psychology, psychology on Second Life, social psychology, psychology and behavioral science, cyberspace psychology and beyond. That one sounds a little scary.
Yeah.
So a number of sites are already being utilized in various degrees mm-hmm. for counseling. Again, as Jim just mentioned, we're not endorsing any of them. We haven't really had any experience with this, but there are opportunities there. Now, one of the most important things I would think if we were going to set up a counseling center ourselves would be the need for privacy.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are ways that you can create a room or an area that would be private, mm-hmm. where nobody else could hear or see your chat as well. And that would be an absolute must in that, and can easily be done within it.
Okay.
But again, the strength of this is it, and it, you know, I don't know enough about the counseling field to know long term
mm-hmm.
if this could really be used for in-depth counseling. But and it might be able to. I don't know. But initially,
mm-hmm.
it gives that level of anonymity. It gives me a chance to go in where you can't recognize me. You won't be able to know who I am in real life. I can hide my profile. I can come in and say, you know what? I have a problem. I want to talk to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be the beginning of a relationship and the beginning of counseling. And the counselor could say, you know, I can help you with this, but maybe you need to do this or go here.
Mm-hmm.
And they can use this as a entry point into counseling. And then redirect them to places where they can really get the help they need.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's that level of anonymity that really becomes a strength in this particular
Absolutely.
Area.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. It's just that whole collaboration, communication, it's changed in Second Life because just of the nature of the environment you're in.
Mm-hmm. Where can listeners go to gain more information if they have more questions?
Sure. Well, first of all, to go to Second Life's website,
mm-hmm.
it's www.secondlife.com. And they have a lot of information out there about what Second Life is, how to sign up for an account. They have a special section on educators' usage of Second Life. And there's also a listserv that's set up. If you go into their educational portion of the Second Life website,
mm-hmm.
You can click on a link there that will allow you to sign up for this, what's called SLED, S-L-E-D, Second Life Educators Listserv.
Okay.
It's a wealth of information. There are about 5,000 educators that are members of that many of them contribute to it. Somebody will post a message, hey, I'm looking for information on da-da-da-da, whatever it might be, and then you might get 20 or 30 or 40 people responding.
Mm-hmm.
The only negative of it is I get about 80 emails a day.
Mm-hmm,
but you
sure.
can also subscribe for the digested version so they send out a lot of the responses all in one
right.
email. So you might only get 2 or 3 emails that way a day. And it's very valuable. And you can always opt out.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have mine set up so it throws it in my email into a separate folder so I can go in and look at them as I want. But I have found so much help out there for issues that we've been trying to address as we've been working through in Second Life here. ISTE Island is excellent. They have a lot of help out there. for the ISTE organization. There's another one called EdTech Island. Okay. There's another one called Edu Island. There are some wikis that are out there. Just search for wikis within Second Life. Once you become a Second Life member, there's a search button down in the center bottom of the screen. You click on that, and you can put in any topic you want. That's how I found those sites in counseling. I just put in counseling or psychology or education psychology. Found lots of information that way. There are people here at our university that have been involved very heavily in Second Life.
Want to email, I'm James Lentz, L-E-N-Z-E. They're welcome to contact me. Mm-hmm. They're welcome to call Lloyd Onyet, O-N-Y-E-T-T.
Mm-hmm. My email address is L-Onyet, L-O-N-Y-E-T-T. At IUP.edu.
And I'm J-L-E-N-Z-E at IUP.edu. Dr. Alan Partridge is available on campus, especially if you're interested in building. Mm-hmm. The Applied Media Simulations and Games Center that he heads on campus is excellent. They helped build Archaeology Island and that ship that we were discussing earlier. So if you want to build something and you're like, oh, I don't know how to build, I just want to do this, you can contract with the Game Center, and they can help you do that.
His email address is Partridge without an E. That's P-A-R-T-R-I-D-G at IUP.edu. The three of us are probably the most involved at our university in directly steering Second Life. We have a Second Life Coordinators Committee made up of anybody on campus who wants to be involved, and we have probably 20 different people across the university, administrators and faculty and staff, and a few students who are involved in that coordination committee. It has done wonders for helping us make decisions what direction we want to go. One of the things that we ran into very early in Second Life, when we bought our first island, everybody wanted to do their own thing, and it just became a mess. Uh-huh. And so we needed some coordination. Not a lot of dictation, but more, let's work this out. You have this space over here in this part of the island, and this person has that space over there, and here's kind of a general theme we would like to have for this island or that island. Those kinds of issues really needed to be resolved, and that coordination committee helped. We offer a series of workshops for our faculty here, and it really needs to be that way at any school that
And we're very willing, by the way, to offer workshops at other universities. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to contact us, Lloyd and I and Alan Partridge, we're all available to come to other universities and do workshops for a nominal fee.
Yeah.
But we're very much willing to come and help you get started in this.
We've offered workshops that were all-day workshops. Mm-hmm. In fact, the very first one we did, we actually hired someone who had been using Second Life and teaching in English, English Lit, and she came in for a two-day workshop to really get those of us that were really going to be involved in it into it in depth. Most of the time we find 3 to 6 hour workshops, first 3 hours just getting everybody comfortable with moving around, navigating and so on, and then maybe a second 3 hours on how to build and do more advanced things in Second Life. We're now thinking that maybe we need to offer more 1 or 2 hour just very basic introduction workshops, and then some 1 or 2 hour very specific topic related workshops too. So we're planning those for the spring semester still. Getting in and just asking questions, that's one of the best ways to find out about it. But there are lots of people out there that are willing to help. Two people that have been very helpful for me out in Second Life as I've had questions have been a lady, her avatar name is Desideria, D-E-S-I-D-E-R-I-A, Stockton. And her real name is Beth Ritter Guth. And she was the one I just mentioned, English professor. She teaches British literature and other classes. She was just so helpful in getting us going, giving us lots of ideas how she is using it, how she had seen others use it. She'd been using Second Life for about a year and a half before we got started in it. Mm-hmm. And then another person from England, Eloise Pasteur, P-A-S-T-E-U-R. I don't know her real name. Somebody asked me one day, well, what does she look like? And I said, I have no idea if she's even female. Her avatar is female and all, but you never know who you're talking to in Second Life necessarily. So, but she has been very helpful in helping us get started with some of our building and scripting and so on. And there are many, many others out there to help. It just seems like everybody wants to give you a help in getting started. we had a lot of lessons that we learned on our own. Dr. Len spent lots of time going around and exploring in Second Life, seeing what worked and what didn't. For example, he found that walls are a problem because you crash into them. A lot of our walls on our islands, you can walk right through. The wall is there to give you some privacy, but you can walk through and navigate without bumping your head and so on. Okay. Found that we needed to make a higher distance between, a bigger distance between the ceiling and floor of buildings, mm-hmm. because otherwise people tended to, especially if they flew into the building, they tended to hit their heads or okay. their feet where they didn't want to. But yet we may need a small wall all the way around the edge of a building that otherwise wouldn't feel like it has walls because people would otherwise fall off the edge. We've discovered many other things as we've explored what works and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. Steps don't work well. Mm-hmm. Why build an identical duplication of your library or your administration building or your classroom building? Well, there are times when you do because you might want that identity, mm-hmm. but there are times when instead use the capability of Second Life. We can't fly by ourselves without help in real life, mm-hmm. but we can in Second Life. We can teleport to any place in the Second Life world. So why not? And we can build a building up in the air. It doesn't have to have any support. It can just hover up there without any support of any kind. So why not put things up there? Or under the water. You don't need to be able to breathe in Second Life, so it doesn't matter whether you have scuba gear on or not. So using the features and capabilities of Second Life to enhance what we can do in real life, all important things to learn. So going out and exploring, seeing what works, what doesn't work, is very important when you first get into it.
Great. I just wanted to thank both of you for your time today and sharing with us your expertise on this and your experiences with using it in academia. It seems like there's a lot of possibilities out there.
So. Absolutely.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. James Lentz and Lloyd Onyet regarding the virtual world of Second Life. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselaraudiosource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.